Thank you. Tonight we are graced by the presence of Eileen M. as our speaker. Oh, sorry. Welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution. Newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Sorry, this meeting is being recorded. So you may visit. Am I going too far?
No, you're doing great.
Okay, sorry. You may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Eileen M., a compulsive overeater from Michigan.
From New Hampshire.
Oh, sorry, New Hampshire. I'm sorry.
Hi, good evening, everyone. My name is Eileen M., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. And yeah, I'm in New Hampshire. So grateful to be here. Thank you for inviting me. I just wanted to start out with saying I'm so grateful for my life today. Being a recovered person, my entire abstinence date is May 14th, 2016. So it's a little over 9 years that I've been entirely abstinent and free from food obsession, which is just such a miracle. And it's a real miracle in my life, and I'm very grateful. I could not have done it without the Big Book, definitely, because I tried and it didn't work. I tried for a very long time. So I wanted to just open this meeting really with in the Big Book, there's in chapter 5, the concept of self-will run riot is introduced. And also, there's a quote in there on page 60. It talks about how most people try to live their life by self-propulsion. So I've been thinking a lot about, what that means exactly. And I looked that word up in the dictionary, or I looked it up online. And so the definition of self-propulsion, it says the ability of an object to move itself using its own power or energy rather than relying on an external force. And then the definition of self-will run riot is a person who tries to control everything in their life through their own efforts and desires rather than trusting and relying on a higher power. And I just thought, wow, that's pretty interesting, because that really describes me and how I tried to live my life for so many years. Until, I started, became a student of the Big Book and really realized, that, hey, this is a problem, that this desire to be in control of everything. It's kind of like, I think for me, it's like a coping mechanism of like, if I'm not in control, then there's this fear of, oh, what's going to happen? I've got to get in there and fix, manage, and control everything. And, that led probably was, the underlying cause of my overeating. And I was also a heavy restrictor as well. That's, part of my past. It's kind of shit because that is part of my history. So when I did come from a family of lots of addiction, lots of chaos, lots of unmanageability. My mother was a compulsive overeater, and my father was alcoholic. My sister's also an alcoholic, and then I have a niece who has anorexia. So, it's just there's a lot of, addiction there. So I think my memories of compulsive eating started around age 5. I think that's my earliest memory. We had this housekeeper, and she was an alcoholic, actually. It's unbelievable. It's kind of all around me. But she kind of introduced me to sugar when I was 5 years old. And from that, I think from that first time I got hooked on it. And I just, started overeating mostly sugar, things that had sugar in it for, many years growing up. I was very always very active as a kid, and I've always been very active as an adult. So I don't know why, but I never really gained a whole lot of weight. Like I said, I was a restrictor, and I really learned about restricting in college. That was kind of like where I learned it. I had this dieting buddy, and she and I would, we'd kind of overeat together, and then the next day we would just start fasting. I mean, it was crazy. It was just this really disordered eating pattern. So there's a memory I have of, like, I think I was like 8 years old, and I was on the school bus, and my neighbor, I had this neighbor that would go to, he went to school with me, and he was older, and he was kind of like a bully. But one day he came over, I guess he like accidentally, I was eating an apple, and he knocked it out of my arms or whatever I had, I had in my hand, and he knocked it out of my hand. And I remember being very upset with him for like a week. I wouldn't talk to him because I was so upset. I lost this apple, and I don't know, this, it just that whole, obsession with food and just getting food, and when am I going to get more, and how can I get more? And I got into a lot of secretive eating because my mother started hiding food from me because she was just like, you can't keep eating things. I would come home from school, and I would sit down and eat a whole cake mix, with a spoon. I would just sit there, and then I would lie about it. So that was kind of this pattern I learned very early, was lying about what I was eating in the house. And yeah, we always had trouble in the family. Like, we couldn't ask for help, so I always had trouble asking for help, for things. So let's see, what else can I talk about? Yeah, I also had this memory of when I was in high school, I was dating this guy. I started dating a guy who was about 15 years old, and his mother used to make, I don't know what it was. It was just this kind of dessert where you had this whole plate, and you could cut it into these bars, this bar kind of form. And some kind of chocolate. I don't know what it was really, but anyway, I think Christmas Eve he brought over, he appears at the door, at the front door, with this plate of these things that his mother made for me. And I remember like telling myself, okay, I'm just gonna have one. And I mean, I could never eat one, just I was gonna have one, and then I was just gonna put it away, for Christmas, and bring it out for the family. And I never did. I actually ate that entire plate that night. It never even occurred to me to share it with other people. I was just like, I couldn't believe that. But I was really, felt pretty out of control most of the time when I was ever around food. And it was so hard. I always wanted to be like the thinnest person. Like, I was in gymnastics when I was 9, and I remember, like, there was a big, I felt like it was a contest of, like, okay, who can be the thinnest girl? And I was always the tallest girl everywhere I went. So, I could eat more than others, but boy, I was just so, I don't know, I was obsessed with being the thinnest person. And that was really hard to achieve. It's really hard to achieve that when you're a compulsive overeater, and you can't stay stopped. And I had no idea what was wrong with me. But I got to high school, and I knew there was something really wrong with me. And I actually started blaming my parents. I thought, okay, it's my parents' fault that I have these issues. And I started, obsessing about, okay, well, when I go to college, I'm going to go to college, and then everything's going to be perfect because I'm going to be away from home. So I won't even see my parents. They won't be around. And I really thought that was going to fix it. I thought, well, if I'm just going to get a college degree, and then I'm going to get a job, and then I'm going to get an apartment, and all the things that you think about, and I thought all those things will fix my problem, because I thought external things are going to fix it. And some kind of achievement would help, or getting something, like getting some material thing, is going to cure me, and I even thought that, getting thin, getting to a certain weight, was going to cure me. So that, I thought, well, if I get to this weight, I won't o compulsively overeat anymore. And that doesn't work either, by the way. Let's see. So I got into OA when I was 26, and I remember a couple months before that, I had this job. I got this job up in New Hampshire because I'm actually originally from Boston, Massachusetts, and I moved here. And I got this dream job right out of college, and I thought, okay, I got this job, and this is going to fix my life. And I was eating lunch with my boss one day, and we were outside, and I had brought my lunch, and she said to me, "Gee, Eileen, you must eat a lot more when you're alone than when you do with other people." And I remember like being really mortified because that was the truth, that like I would go out with people and I wouldn't eat very much. I'd get a tiny salad that would be my dinner, but then like I would make up for it at home. So I felt so much shame about that, but I didn't know what to do about it. And I back in those days, I was going to this church in town, and I remember I was going to church on Sunday. It was a Catholic church, and I was getting on my knees and asking God to help me because I couldn't stop eating. I just said, "Please help me stop eating." And it was really remarkable what happened, because a few can't even tell you the amount of time, but maybe it's a couple of weeks later, but I actually met somebody who was in OA. I couldn't believe it, and she was telling me about OA. I was actually at an Al-Anon meeting, and that's where I met this woman who told me about OA. And she said, "These are here. Here's when the meetings are, and you can start going." So I started going. I was 26, and when I got to program, there was that pamphlet with the 15 questions on it. And what I thought was really interesting was that I answered yes to every question. Especially there was a question that said something like, do you restrict calories or something like that after you've binged? And that was exactly what I did. And I was thinking about how this is a disease of self-reliance, because I always relied on myself. I mean, my life was very chaotic, and I had a lot of social anxiety when I was in my 20s. I think probably from growing up with the alcoholism, there's a lot of social anxiety, and I really had no idea how to interact with people or how to show up in life or how to show up at a job. I mean, I really didn't, and I had trouble, with I remember like maybe the first year of OA meetings, I would just cry in the meeting because I couldn't believe it. I mean, people would actually talk about their feelings, and I had no idea what I was feeling. People would say, "How are you feeling today?" And it's like, no idea, that was really hard. But I remember getting a sponsor, and back then, some of you might have remembered this if you were in OA for a long time, but we had this OA was kind of endorsing this food plan called Gray Sheet, and I got on Gray Sheet, and Gray Sheet, was very restricted. It seemed to work. I really wasn't very, I wasn't very overweight. I was about 10 pounds from goal weight at that point. But I learned, it's like I learned for the first time how to eat normally following Gray Sheet. And I got abstinent right away. And within 6 months, I went to this 12-step retreat that was here in our little town, actually. It was amazing that we actually got someone from Los Angeles Intergroup to lead this retreat, and it was using the Big Book. And I really didn't understand the Big Book at the time, because we would just read the Big Book, but we wouldn't study it. But this retreat was very good. It was a very intense weekend of doing the steps in 1 weekend. So this was the first time I wrote a 4-step. So I had been in program 6 months, and I'd been absent about 3 months when I did this retreat. So what happened is, I had this spiritual awakening, and I was abstinent for 3 years, and it was great. And however, what happened was I relapsed with sweeteners. So yeah, sweeteners are totally off, not something I can handle. But and here's an example of what would happen is I would remember, if you remember, there's, I don't know if it's still sold, but there's this iced tea that you can buy, and it's, it has one of the sweet, I think it's got aspartame or something. But I was buying this iced tea that you would just add water to it to make the iced tea, because it was this powder. And it's sort of the powder or the iced tea or whatever became a vehicle for the sweetener, because I would go through that jar in about, 2 days. And I don't know if you've ever done that, but if you overdo it on sweeteners, it really causes a lot of stomach upset, actually. But that was a problem, and I realized, sweeteners are a problem. And I have to tell you, after that relapse, after the 3 years of abstinence, and then the relapse, it was around 1992, I actually became anorexic, because my weight kept dropping, and I was getting this effect from being too thin. Like I was getting a lot of attention from people saying, "Yeah, Eileen, you're too thin." You know, I was actually 20 pounds underweight, and I thought that would make me happy because I was, you know, the thinnest person in the room, like I wanted to be. And that didn't. I was not happy with that. Actually, that year I got diagnosed with depression, so I was really very unhappy at that time. So I just want to to say that, you know, I struggled from then on for 24 years until I found the solution. So I found the solution in 2016, and you know, I just can't believe how remarkable that is, because I had to leave my local meetings in order to find the solution. I kind of thought that was something I would have to do, because the problem with my local meetings is that people believed that you have to be abstinent for 90 days before you can start the steps. So that's what I kept trying to do, and I couldn't do it. And let's see, where am I going? So, you know, when I came into, I discovered this meeting called A Vision for You. And actually, I should say, a friend told me about it. It was a friend of mine that we were in the inner group with. She told me about it because I was really pretty desperate in 2016, and I really wanted to stop, but I didn't know how to stop. Now, the way that the local meetings are here is that if you get a sponsor, this is still going on, unfortunately, here, but if you get a sponsor, they will give you a food plan, and they will tell you exactly what to eat, and they will monitor your weight loss. And then if, you know, you either lose or gain, they will tell you know, how you should adjust that. That doesn't really work for me very well, because usually there's a lot of people that there's such a height difference. Like I'm 5'10, I'm very active. You know, I've always been physically active. And, you know, if you have someone who's, you know, 20 years older than me, who's not active and who's a lot shorter, and they give me their food plan, that doesn't really work very well. So what was nice about this particular meeting I found on the phone, it was A Vision for You. Is that no one gave me a food plan. They just said, you really should go to a nutritionist. So that's what I did. And so I got, you know, I was very honest about, okay, I have a lot of alcoholic foods because my disease progressed quite a bit in all these years. So I have many alcoholic ingredients, actually. So, you know, she asked me, okay, which ones are they? Tell me what they are. That's what you're going to put down. And then she wanted me to put down my alcoholic or my compulsive food behavior. So I told her what those were. And, you know, I don't know, by the grace of God or something, I don't know, is those got relieved the next day. I wasn't practicing them anymore. That was really kind of incredible. So I don't practice those behaviors at all. And so what happened with this sponsor? It was really great. So, you know, I don't know if anyone here is from, I think there's couple people here that I recognize that are probably familiar with A Vision for You. You know, it's a daily phone meeting. There's a lot of recovery there. It's very strong. And that's the first time I heard the word recovered. I'd never heard that word before. And it really gives you a lot of hope if you hear someone say they're recovered. I mean, you know, it's not cured, but, you know, it's recovered, and it's, you know, based on the daily reprieve. So I was really encouraged by that, and I just wanted what, you know, these people that I heard on the line had. And I remember saying to this sponsor, you know, I want this more than anything else in my life. You know, I really did. And you know, when I started with that sponsor, I was a normal weight. And I think what's so remarkable about that is I was very unhappy. I was very unhappy with my life. But I was a normal weight, and I thought that, you know, being a normal weight was going to cure me, my unhappiness. But you know, it doesn't. So, I you know, worked with this sponsor, and you know, I was entirely ready to stop, and I was desperate. And you know, I knew that I was desperate because of my actions. You know, she said to me, "Okay, you're going to call me every day at 6 a.m." And I am not a morning person. And at that time, I was working at, you know, a job that was an I was kind of working this late. Job where I was going in at night. So I did not want to call at 6 in the morning, but you know, I was willing to do that. And I did that, and I did everything she suggested. And I don't know, the food obsession, I feel like it was removed from that first day we started. It was just so amazing. So I've just, you know, I got recovered, and it took about 2 months, actually 2.5 months or so. And I've just started sponsoring right away. And I think the sponsoring has been so helpful to me. I've, because every time we're sponsoring, I'm going through the book again with people, and that really has enriched my life a lot and has really helped me to understand the steps and what they mean, or how to, how to work them. So, I wanted to also just change gears a little bit and talk about something I've learned recently. I've done the steps a couple of times since 2016. I've gone through them in these various workshops, and I've always gotten something more, like I've gotten a greater transformation. And when I just think back on my life since the last 9 years, it's just like I'm a much nicer person. I kind of like I've always been kind of like a type A personality, sort of like really impatient, really, I don't know, kind of an overachiever type, but I've kind of really kind of calmed down. So I'm not so much like that. I'm a lot more patient, with myself and with other people. And so what I wanted to sort of switch gears a little bit too is to talk about something that I've been realizing, kind of a new kind of powerlessness that I started working with this sponsor around March. And I told her, hey, I want to go through the steps again because I want to, do some deeper work. And so, we've been looking at my thinking patterns, and that's really interesting. Is part of step three is in step three I say I'm turning my will and my life over, and I thought, well, what does that mean? And my will is really my the ability that that I'm given by God to make decisions and take actions based on the decisions. And one of the things that I've started turning over is my thought life. And that's like been really, really like life changing for me because, I saw a quote the other day that I really liked. It was on Facebook actually, but it said, "The quality of your life the quality of your life is determined by your thoughts." And I thought, oh, that's perfect because, yeah, part of my trying to fix, manage, and control habit, is really preceded by my thoughts. The Big Book talks a lot about, when we have resentment and what that means. Now, when I was in OA before 2016, I didn't really understand what to do with resentment. So I used to eat over resentments. I ate at people. I couldn't get like whatever they did to me out of my head. Like I would obsess about it and ruminate about it. And that's a really, difficult thought pattern. And I learned that, there's no way I can get rid of that unless I do a 10th step. I have to do a 10th step on that. So anytime I'm ruminating, this sponsor told me that's a resentment. And you need to write about it and call somebody and talk about it and then do service. So that's what I've been doing. But I'm just so amazed at how, I used to spend like entire days ruminating about what other people had done to me, or how they didn't meet my expectations, or if I perceived that there was some kind of criticism from them, I would obsess about that all day long. And I mean, to the point where you're like, I'd be driving somewhere and I couldn't remember how I got there because I was so in my head obsessing with this narrative of, they can't do that to you, and so it's really helpful. Every time I've, found myself ruminating, I've been doing 10 steps. And I think what's helped, what we know, what I've learned is just that living in 10, 11, 12 is, doing a nightly review every night. I do that, and I actually send it to someone every day. It doesn't say that you have to do that, and the Big Book doesn't say you send it to somebody, but I've been doing that. I also make sure that my prayer and meditation time in the morning is solid. It's like I do that each day, and some days, what I do is typically I set a timer for 30 minutes and I do that. Some days, if I feel like I don't have time, if I'm running out the door, I just make sure I do it at least 5 minutes because I have to have that contact. For me, meditation is very valuable because I cannot run my life by myself because it does not work. And I really need a higher power to manage my life. So I think that when I started seeing the value of meditation, I made sure I was doing it every day. So that's something I do every day. I do follow this food plan that my nutritionist gave me. I do weigh and measure. My food plan is very black and white. It's very, very strict. And I'm not saying that everyone has to have a strict food plan, but it works for me because I have, I have all these foods that set up the phenomenon of craving for me. So, what I learned studying the Big Book is the program of recovery is the steps. Prior to that, I thought the program of recovery was the tools because that's kind of the main thing that's emphasized at the meetings that locally is that, it's the tools. And it's like, well, I would do all the tools every day, but it wasn't keeping me abstinent. So, yeah, the steps really work, at least for me, because I'm a real compulsive reader. So yeah, I wanted to just talk about that, how, my thinking is so, it's so important to really just observe my thinking, because the other problem I can get into is catastrophizing. That's another thinking. It's actually a distorted thinking pattern. That can be a problem at times. I can get into that. And as soon as I'm aware of that, I just, I start my 10th step and I call somebody and I just tell them, I discuss it with someone else. And then I ask God for what's the next indicated action. And that's amazing because that has freed me from those distorted thinking patterns is to do that. Because those are the things that used to drive me to eating was, fear or resentment. But those are the things. Yeah, so I realize that I'm powerless over that distorted thinking. I mean, it can just come out of nowhere. I can be having a great day, and all of a sudden, I'm catastrophizing about, oh, what's going to happen next week at this time, And yeah, it's really amazing. So, the sponsor told me, when you're in those distorted thinking patterns, you're actually agnostic. And it's like I didn't know that. I'm agnostic, really, So, because you're not trusting and relying on God. And it's so easy to go into those patterns. But, when I've noticed that, since I've been doing this work, it's actually less and less frequent. Like I have a lot of days that I have peace and serenity. And, in the Big Book, it says in somewhere, and I don't know where this is, but it says that, we can have our life can be very good even under pressure and difficulty. And that is the truth that wow, that has been my
5 minutes.
truth for years. And how much time was that? Is that 5 minutes? I think I just heard somebody say something. I'm not
5
sure.
minutes to go.
Great, thank you. So that's a really hopeful quote out of the Big Book is that our lives can be great even under pressure and difficulty. Because I've had so many challenges in 9 years. But you know what? My higher power just shows up for me all the time. And I have never been let down by my higher power. Anytime I've asked for help and strength to walk through something, I've never been let down. So I want to share that and make sure I said that today. And I don't know. I think that's probably all. I guess I think probably the most powerful sentence in the Big Book for me is two words. And I don't know where it is. I don't remember where it is, but the two words are it works because it does work. This works. And if you're out there struggling, just know that, this works. And I love the first line in chapter 5. It says, "Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path." I mean, it is the truth. And I just love how it says rarely. It doesn't say sometimes. It says rarely have we seen a person fail. And I think with that, I'm probably going to pass and thank everyone for inviting me.